In this episode of Pop Culture Weekly, I talk with Nathan W. Pyle all about his brand new Apple TV Plus series, Strange Planet. And then I talk with legendary producer, writer, director, filmmaker, Akiva Goldsman, all about his Apple TV Plus series, The Crowded Room. Let's go!
Welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon from iHeartRadio. Your pop culture news, views, reviews, and celebrity interviews on all the movies, TV, music, and pop culture you crave weekly. Here's Kyle McMahon.
Hello, and welcome to Pop Culture Weekly with Kyle McMahon. I, of course, am Kyle McMahon, and I am so happy that you're here with me for another week and another episode of Pop Culture Weekly. It's a little weird with, you know, the strike, the Writers Guild strike, and the actors strike. So we're doing the best we can. I'm trying to find creative ways to keep the show interesting until the strike is over, whenever that may be, and the actors and writers get, you know, all that they're due. Oh, and by the way, I'm getting all my strike news from Deadline.com. I love Deadline. You know, I've talked about them before. Deadline is the breaking news for Hollywood. I mean, it's, you know, Billboard magazine for music. It's the Bible for music. So Deadline is the Bible for Hollywood, for movies and series and all that good stuff. So I'm getting everything. I'm checking 12 times a day on Deadline.com to find out the latest on the strikes and everything else that is going on. So get your strike news and everything else there, Deadline.com. Today, I'm really excited because we have two great guests. Nathan W. Pyle, who is the creator of Strange Planet, which is now a brand new series on Apple TV Plus, and it is awesome. I really, really love it. Also, I talk with Akiva Goldsman. Now, Akiva is a filmmaker, screenwriter, you know, producer, director. I mean, he is the consummate filmmaker, really. And you may know him from such things as Batman Forever, A Time to Kill, Practical Magic, A Beautiful Mind, where he won an Oscar. In a Golden Globe, I, Robot, Cinderella Man, Da Vinci Code, I Am Legend, The Divergent series, Transformers The Last Knight, an upcoming Constantine sequel, so much. Oh, and that's just on the film side. On the TV side, he's got Star Trek Discovery, Fringe, Star Trek Picard, Star Trek Strange New Worlds, and The Crowded Room, which, you know, I've been covering The Crowded Room since before it debuted on Apple TV Plus, which is based on the 1981 nonfiction novel The Minds of Billy Milligan by Daniel Keyes. Of course, it stars Tom Holland, Amanda Seyfried. Really, really, really incredible series. And Akiva is the creator of The Crowded Room. So two really great interviews today. I'm really excited about them, and I can't wait for you to hear them. Let's start off with Nathan W. Pyle as we discuss his Apple TV Plus series, Strange Planet. Thank you so much for speaking with me, Nathan. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kyle.
Of course. So tell me a little bit about, you know, so I find it interesting that with the series, Strange Planet, back in the beginning, you actually went to school for theology, correct?
Yes, that's true. Yeah.
How did that, you know, I it's interesting to me because, you know, I think there's so many, interesting pieces that come up, you know, when you're dealing with theology and then you're dealing with a series like this, where it takes place not of our world. How did that influence you in Strange Planet?
A lot of common thread there where you're ultimately asking what else and who else is out there. That was a big part of what I've always been curious about. When it came to, you know, studying theology, I realized that so many historical ideas that humans have asked all stem from the same curiosities that we're flying along on this planet through space, trying to figure out existence. And we don't really know the answer to a lot of the ultimate questions. And yet we still have to fold our laundry even as we're thinking about that. So that's a big part of what I think made Strange Planet fun to make. There's that existential question at the heart of every human. At the same time, we're drinking, you know, coffee in the morning or drinking alcohol at night, trying to enjoy the presence of each other, understanding that no one has those answers exactly. But we're all in this together trying to figure it out.
I love that. And you know, going forward a little, you decided you were teaching theology, I believe, and then decided you wanted to dive into the arts as a profession. And you kind of took, you know, it, not to be funny, but a leap of faith in doing that. And it's obviously paid off for you. Was that scary, you know, kind of leaving something that's, you know, much more traditional and steady and
sure.
And being like, I'm going to jump into the unknown?
You know, it was really New York City and the internet at the same time that I jumped into. So 15 years ago, I guess, at this point, I found not just in New York, I found a lot of creative people, but I found on the internet through a company called Threadless. I started to design cartoons and create t-shirt designs, and found other artists through Threadless. And I think what I appreciated most was that it is very difficult to be an artist. It's very lonely. It's you're independent. You're trying to find your way. But if you find a community of artists, a community of like-minded creative people, through the internet, especially, that can be a really huge boost to not just morale, but to your own ideas of what's possible, for sure. Yeah.
And you created Strange Planet kind of as like a web comic, which blew up a lot through Reddit and Instagram, social media. Did you ever envision at that time, you know, this is going to be a series on Apple TV Plus?
No, nor would I have guessed that I could get to work with Dan Harmon because of it. It was all very surprising. What I did realize was I had a moment there in 2019 where I had to put aside everything else I was doing and draw one comic a day. I had to make sure I posted every single day. And that was a big moment for me because I never stuck to anything. I'd stuck to that. Really every day. Post one comic and took a lot of my time and energy doing that. But that was what was necessary in that moment, because that was the moment of expansion, the moment of exploration, to make something for a whole year, where you posted every day. And that's really, I think, the secret to how, that continued to expand in that first year. Yeah.
So do you believe that, that dedication, because I mean, doing something every day for a year, except for like brushing your teeth or something, you know, I mean, doing something like that every day for a year is insane dedication. Are those the Michael Jordan hours, you know, that you believe led you to the explosion?
I would never want to communicate anything, but that it was very fun. And I was still living a healthy lifestyle, but it was, I think, sticking to it. I think a lot of creative people can relate to being a little bit interested in a lot of different projects, which I think you, anyone has probably had that experience in life. Like, I'd like to paint, but I'd also like to sculpt. There are a lot of different ways that we can go creatively. Doing the same thing every day for a whole year was creating in a way that actually stretched me in a different direction that I'd never done before. And I do recommend that kind of dedication, not necessarily grind. I don't want to say that word, but dedication to and practice, which I do think really did help me grow in a way that I had never done before, because I'm interested in too many different directions at once. So.
and now it's, you know, it's coming. It is here. The time is now. What is this moment like for you? You know, it's an extremely smart series. It is, as you said, very existential. We, I feel like, as the viewers, are the aliens.
Right.
You know, what is this moment like for you?
It's going to be a lot of making sure that I get a glimpse of the reactions from different corners of the planet I have to capture these occasionally. Someone will tag me on Instagram on a story from some other country, and so much of the audience is from the other countries. I just want to know how they respond and how it sounds to them, and even some of the languages that are dubbed in. I'm really excited to see that, because I think that's part of what I've loved most about this experience, is just learning about other cultures. When I did a comic about April Fool's Day, I was told by some of my French fans that they had something similar but different, and it revolved around fish. And I was so fascinated to learn, like, everyone has their own tooth fairy analogous, something analogous to the tooth fairy in their culture. Everyone has their own versions of a lot of these different traditions. And it's beautiful to understand that. And this is where I am now. I'm just learning more about other people and how they receive the work. Will be really fun.
I love that, and I think it's very reflective of the series itself. So it's very much apropos.
Is that
yes. I shouldn't use big words because I, you know. thank you so much, Nathan. I can't wait for everybody to see Strange Planet on Apple TV Plus.
Nathan W. Pyle. So Strange Planet is out today, right now, on Apple TV Plus, and it is well worth your time. It's really cool. As you heard in, you know, my interview with Nathan, it's really refreshing. I really love it, and I think you will too. And of course, let me know when you check it out. All right, next up, the legendary. This man is, you know, he's one of those creators that has been involved with like every big thing ever. And so I'm really excited to talk to him for the first time. Let's get right into it. My interview with Akiva Goldsman.
So we're going to talk about The Crowded Room, which is absolutely incredible. But I wanted to go back a little bit, if we could, to your incredible career. How did you've done so many iconic, works, film and TV, and, how did you get into this?
Well, the truth is I'm a failed fiction writer. Mm. I always wanted to be a writer, when I was a boy, and I was not particularly good at it. I went to undergraduate and then graduate school for writing. I got a master's degree in fiction writing from NYU, which we refer to as pre-unemployment. And then I spent 10 years trying to sell a short story, and I sold not one, although I have boxes of rejection notes, you know, back when they were hand typed. And at a certain point, it seemed that maybe I thought screenplay would be easier. And I read a book, and I took a course by a guy named Robert McKee, and I wrote a screenplay, and I got lucky. And so people always say, oh, you sold the first screenplay you wrote, and that's a great story. But the truth is I wrote it on the other end of thousands and thousands and thousands of unsold terrible pages.
Yeah, yeah. I love when people say, you know, oh, overnight success or whatever. Well, yeah, but you didn't see the 20 years before that of, you know, sleeping on a bench or something to do your art. You know what I mean?
Indeed. I actually do think writing is like sit-ups. I mean, if you do enough of them, it will make a difference. If you write through enough bad pages, you're likely to get to a good one.
I love that. And for you, you know, you've done Batman Forever and Batman and Robin. What was that like for you to get such, you know, huge lore, iconic properties?
Well, you know, it was a very interesting time and a very different time for superhero movies because, you know, comic books are typically, you know, ahead of
recording in progress.
Oops. Comic books are typically ahead of the curve, you know, when it comes to sort of presentation of superheroes. I mean, I think it's sort of caught up now. I think Kevin Feige was really instrumental in kind of getting the two to be paced together. But in those days, nobody quite knew what was acceptable. And of course, comic book fans, myself included, were sort of darker and... And then Hollywood was a little bit lighter, and Tim Burton had done the sort of a great sort of the, I think sort of the seminal job of introducing a darker toned and more sort of comic book faithful version of Batman to the world. Warner's kind of was like, well, maybe it's too dark. And they hired Joel Schumacher, and I had been working with Joel on the John Grisham movies, and he knew I was a Batman fan. And so I came in and worked on Batman Forever. And that was really a delight. And there's a lot of sort of conversation now on the internet about the unseen version of Batman Forever. And there really is a longer version, which is in fact darker than the released version. And it's all about guilt and shame and all the reasons why Bruce might suit up like that every day and get himself in a situation where he gets the shit kicked out of him on a nightly basis. And the idea that maybe that's punitive, self-punitive, and he's trying to sort of work out some of his guilt. And I'm not the first person to suggest that, but I was probably the first person to get it into a movie and then have it cut out.
Right.
So that was fun, and that was weird, and that was intense, because that was also the beginning of when movies in that way intersected popular culture in a kind of pervasive, marketed way. So there was the Seal song and the Happy Meal, and the you couldn't go anywhere without sort of the world reflecting back the thing you were working on, which was awesome.
Yeah.
And then there was Batman and Robin, which wasn't awesome. and the exact opposite experience, you know, and all I can say about that is, you know, we didn't mean for it not to work. I mean, you know, nobody makes a thing in hopes that it sucks. You know, we tried really hard to make a movie that we didn't make, and, you know, it happens sometimes. And that was no fun.
But you know, at the end of the day, you got to bring these iconic characters from page to screen, you know? I mean, that's pretty cool no matter how it turned out, I think.
It is cool. And of course, what is cool as a fan and as a human is, you know, you do wander around those sets, you know, and as a writer and sort of like, we really did build Wayne Manor and the Batmobile, and the actors were great and the process was extraordinary. Then the product was, you know, different.
And you have, you know, gone on to write and produce and direct. Your first film that you directed, I believe, was Winter's Tale, correct?
It was, and I directed that. It was a book that I loved very much, a novel that I think is extraordinary. And I directed it. My wife had just died, and I did it as a kind of love letter to her. And I sort of enjoined a lot of folks that I knew, and probably again didn't really know enough to make the movie, but kind of needed to, and was lucky enough to get to do it. And so in its own way, it's a weirdly personal moment that sort of because of my particular life experience and career ended up being reflected on film.
That's beautiful. I'm so sorry for your loss. I lost my mom 2 years ago to pancreatic cancer, and I similarly did I'm finishing a limited series called Death, Grief, and Other Shit We Don't Discuss, where I went around the country, and the first part of each episode is narrative, telling my mom's story on that particular topic, you know, diagnosis or the funeral or whatever, and then the second half of each episode is talking to a subject matter expert on that topic. And
That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Hardest thing I've ever done.
Yeah, I bet.
But most rewarding. And so I find it interesting that, you know, I didn't know that with Winter's Tale, but you pour yourself into this project, and it has helped me grieve. I'm never going to get over that loss. I was very close with my mom, and I'll be grieving the rest of my life. But as a creative, and I'm sure it was similar for you, I had to put that energy somewhere or I wouldn't have survived. And
yes,
that's what I did.
Yes. And I do think that that activity, that the sort of the transmutation of the pain into something that you share with other people moves the grief, you know, it shifts it into a different place. And so you do keep it, but it becomes an artifact of your insides, you know, rather than this whole. You know, for me, honestly, my My whole career has actually been sort of secretly about smuggling my own particular point of view and typically my own losses into other people's narrative structures. My collaborations are collaborations in adaptation. They're collaborations over time. So A Beautiful Mind was really about the group home that my parents founded that I grew up in, which was for emotionally disturbed children. So I didn't understand that people didn't hit their head against the wall or hang babies out, or see things flying around outside of the windows because that's the world I grew up in. And so I could create a world for John Nash where his reality was subjective, but seemed quite real to him. And Crowded Room was very much that for me too. Was a kind of a navigation of my own suffering as a kid and the suffering I've seen around me when it comes to you know, real trauma and pain and what human beings do in relation to that.
This the series is absolutely beautiful, Tom. The whole cast is incredible. I really enjoy how it almost is play-like for me, like you're watching a play rather than a series or film or whatever, because it's very much contained in a lot of ways, and it makes it, because of the content, it makes it so much more impactful for me anyway. Was that something that you as you're writing this that you went in thinking, or did that just kind of come naturally? Or
I am a big believer, I think, just reflexively in these kind of first person narrative objects, you know. Beautiful Mind is that, I Am Legend is that, where you kind of never leave the company of the protagonist, you know. And now they're a little harder to write because there's no B plot. In the first four episodes of Crowded Room, you're just with Tom. You're with the character of Danny all the time. There are no cutaways, right? Because it is fundamentally a subjective reality. And the best way to sort of seduce an audience into intimacy, right, or invite them into intimacy, is to get them up close to the lead character. So I think part of that experience is, I think it's shot that way. I think it's also, you know, it's built in close-ups a lot, but it's also the inescapability of the experience of the lead character, which is a little bit more atypical. We don't really notice, but typically in structure of TV and movie, you cut away to something else,
right,
and then you come back, and that kind of gives you a breath, and it also makes it feel bigger. Stay with the lead, and it's smaller but more intense, and so I think in some ways that's what you're reacting to.
Yeah, and it works flawlessly. This series, I'm trying to be spoiler free. This is a series that deals with real issues that so many of us deal with in ways we might not even recognize or maybe should be recognized. How do you balance that heavy, you know, subject with also being entertaining, if that makes sense, because it's weighty, you know?
Look, I think the show's a hard show. I really do. I think there's no two ways about it. I mean, you know, we're talking about some of the most painful things that, you know, that you know, occur on our planet, you know, that what adults do to children, is about as horrible as anything if what they're doing is horrible. Like, you know, there's sort of no way around that. And what the human mind does to manage that kind of pain is extraordinary, but also painful. So part of how the show works for those who think it works is you become very close to the character of Danny Sullivan because Tom Holland is such a profoundly good actor and he's doing such an amazing job in the show. It's really, he's revelatory and he pulls you in and the story hopefully pulls you in and you're walking through life and this incident, this crime with this kid. And it sort of tries to tease you into thinking it's a thriller. And that hopefully gets you engaged enough that then when it reveals itself to not be really a thriller at all, certainly not a thriller of incident, but a thriller of emotion. It's a mystery of emotion, not a mystery of story, really. And as you watch this kid, play again played by Tom, start to understand himself and the truth of the world he lives in, you know, that is engaging. Entertaining is a hard word because I think one feels compelled to watch it if one is, if it's working. I think one is engaged with it. I think one is grateful to have seen it. But, you know, it's not a light experience. And we knew that going in. But I think that the things it's talking about are not light, and sort of, you know, need to be addressed. And so we sort of smuggle them into a story and hope that by engaging with the character and the other wonderful actors around it, people will become empathetic to those who seem different to them.
I love that. And that kind of answers, you know, the final thing I was going to ask you was, what do you hope someone that films this, watches this, what do you hope the takeaway is in the viewing experience?
Well, you know, I think we made this honestly with a very singular purpose, which is to be an empathy generator, to sort of create the opportunity for people to see those they might think of as different as not so different after all. People who struggle with mental illness are often perceived as other. We look at them and we instantly disconnect. You know, we don't say there, but for the grace of God, go I. We kind of go, oh, that's different. And so when I am lucky and when it's working, what I'm often trying to do, and most particularly in this piece, is to say, no, it may seem unreasonable to you, but you're outside of that person's mind. You're outside of that person's experience. But if you could inhabit their skin, if you could feel their heart the way they do, everything they're doing makes perfect sense. It's just a different reality than yours. And to me, that's so sorely lacking today. Our ability to understand other people's experience has been elbowed out by our need to just pay attention to our own. And with this loss of empathy comes the world we're living in. And so if we can use stories to bridge those gaps between people and make the other not so other, if we could wear a skin that isn't ours, our compassion will increase and maybe the things will get a little better.
I love that. I love that. And I think all art should aim to do that. Sir, I could talk to you for hours about your work and everything.
I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. The Crowded Room, exclusively on Apple TV Plus, is I am absolutely in love with it as a piece. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And come in, next project, come back on.
Happy to. I look forward to it.
Thanks, you.
Man. Take care.
You too. Akiva Goldsman. This guy, as I said, he is just the consummate filmmaker. He's involved in every aspect, you know, of filmmaking, from creating, you know, The Crowded Room on Apple TV Plus, to directing, writing, producing, executive producing. I mean, he does it all. So two incredible interviews today. I'm so happy that you got to listen to them and hang out with me for an hour or so. Don't forget to keep on checking deadline.com for the up-to-date strike news. I am really hoping for a resolution that gets the actors and the directors and the writers, the actors and the writers and everyone else paid what they are due. So deadline.com for all the latest on that. In any event, keep in touch with me on Threads and Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and everywhere else. And let me know, as always, what you think. Share the show. If you have loved this episode, share it with a friend that you think would too. That really, really helps. And of course, your reviews on Apple Podcasts. Your honest to goodness reviews on Apple Podcasts help grow the show too. So I will see you next week. I love you. We out.
Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Weekly. Hear all the latest at popcultureweekly.com.
I had two great interviews today. They were amazing, yay. And I will say okay to more interviews, yay.